America's Tale of Two Cities. Juan, you are beginning a 21-city tour, and it may be more, starting right here at the New School on Thursday night. I hope to see people at 7 o'clock in New York City. You're moving on to Culver City, to Somer, California, Washington, D.C., Tempe, Arizona, Austin, Texas, Newark, Kansas City, College Park, San Francisco. You can check out the tour at democracynow.org. And a very special shout-out to our engineer, Flip, Mike DeFilippo, just marked 15 years at Democracy Now!
And you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Ingenio Milagro Playfest, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. The Ingenio Milagro Playfest will feature four plays by Latinx playwrights and a concert readings over 3 days after a short rehearsal period. The playwrights will also get to work with the guest artist Daniel Jacquez. Again, that's Ingenio Milagro Playfest, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
It is 5:01, and coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News. This program has been made possible by KBOO members and support from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Androids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, with sustained winds of 185 miles per hour, Hurricane Irma hit the islands of Barbuda and Antigua this morning as the most powerful Category 5 hurricane ever recorded in the Atlantic Ocean.
East winds out of the gorge slowed down this morning, decreasing the ashfall in the Portland metro area, but the Eagle Creek fire is still 0% contained and has burnt over 31,000 acres.
A U.S. citizen was wounded Wednesday during a suicide attack at an entrance gate at Bagram Air Base in northern Afghanistan. The attacker was suspected to be from the Taliban.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 6th, 2017. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is fired up.
Who here hasn't been to the gorge several times to see the waterfalls, if not to hike? When friends and family come to visit for the first time, where do we take them? The waterfalls will still be there. At least our city wasn't flooded with chemical-soaked water. At least a million of us aren't homeless because of it. 30,000 acres burning, 0% contained. The shifted wind stops the fire's march to Portland, but sends it east into the national forest and dry grasslands. All these symptoms. Another record hurricane slams the Caribbean and Florida. Wildfires in Greenland for the first time. The worst fire ever outside L.A., and the West continues burning. Flogging the young guys who started the fire doesn't bring back trees, let me breathe easier or cry less. We'll all be more careful for a while. I've seen fire and I've seen rain, but will anyone see a healthy earth again? For Poetic and Climate Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
East winds out of the gorge ceased this morning, decreasing the ashfall in the Portland area. But the Eagle Creek fire is still 0% contained and has burnt more than 31,000 acres. The temperature is cooling slightly, and the area has a 40% chance of rain beginning tonight, which should help the over 600 firefighters working on the blaze. However, the rains are expected to also bring thunderstorms and lightning, potentially starting new fires. So far, no one has been injured in the fire, and only one home and four outbuildings have been destroyed. Firefighters' priorities are protecting homes, historic structures like Multnomah Falls Lodge, and the Bull Run Watershed. The air quality through much of the state is still poor, and residents in smoky areas are advised to avoid strenuous work and exercises outdoors. All five of Oregon's members of Congress sent an urgent request to congressional leaders, asking them to include wildfire suppression funds in Hurricane Harvey relief legislation. The Chetco Bar Fire in southwest Oregon, the state's largest at 176,000 acres, is only 5% contained and is continuing to grow. Oregon has 25 active wildfires, comprising nearly 500,000 acres.
Chris Andre attended a press conference from the sheriff's office at Troutdale for evacuation information for the community.
Evacuation notice simply means that we want you to be aware of that something is going on, right? A level two evacuation notice is going to be more pressing. Level two, we're going to want you to actively start packing things of value, right? Start thinking about where am I going to go and how am I going to get there. And then the level three is the most serious. Level three means we are very concerned for your safety, where you're at. The fire is very close. You need to leave immediately. So in addition to press conferences here with the media, which we're doing several times a day, folks can get information on their local TV station. Any one of the local news stations have that information. In addition to our social media, Twitter account and Facebook page here at the Sheriff's Office. If there are areas, many of our residents here east of Troutdale, we've been able to go door to door to at least advise them in the level one notice that, hey, this is going on, and here's how you're going to find out more information. So while there are some folks who don't have access to social media these days, we found oftentimes that those folks still have access to television, and so that's why these press briefings that we do several times a day are very important to get that word out.
And animals, what do people feel strongly, of course, about their animals? What do you recommend?
So if you need extra help taking an animal with you, the Multnomah County Animal Control Services folks have set up a phone number where you can call, and they also have a link on their website where they can help you, to the best of their ability, get some resources together. So we're talking about larger animals, people that have livestock, house, you know, horses, cows, sheep, things like that. If you have a household pet, then hopefully you have the ability to move your household pet in whatever mode of transportation you take. But if you need extra help, Multnomah County Animal Control Services can help you.
Here's an example, and this would pertain to me. What about a considerable flock of chickens?
Sure. Again, our folks at our friends at the Multnomah County Animal Control Services have all sorts of different resources to help move animals. Already overnight, last night, I know they helped move some sheep and some goats, for example. So those folks, that's their subject of expertise, if you will. And so they would be the folks that, if they couldn't problem solve for you, my guess is they have some resources they could point you to. Given the terrain and the topography, a lot of steep canyons, for example, heavily forested areas, it's been very dangerous to get foot crews in there like you might see on other forest fires. The issues that we have with the level of smoke and the high winds make it very dangerous for the aircraft that would normally fight a fire to be able to fly in here. When it's very smoky, the pilots can't see the mountain ridges, and obviously that's a concern. We don't want them to crash a plane and get injured. So there are resources that are coming out here. The fire managers are constantly on an hour-by-hour basis figuring out how they're going to do that. The resources that are here, what they have been focusing on is structure protection. So, for example, at our 3 o'clock briefing, our fire PIO indicated that in the Warrendale-Dodson communities, there were approximately 58 structures that were saved last night by these firefighting crews. They did a fantastic job to do that. Multnomah Falls Lodge was saved overnight last night. There were fire crews working on that.
That's very good to hear. I know a lot.
Chris Andre also spoke with Police Information Officer Don Hamilton about the I-84 closure and possible detours.
Hi. Chris Andre with KBOO.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. I'm also a farmer. I live on Troutdale Road, so I've been up all night.
We've talked before.
Yeah, I believe. Right. So I'm speaking with Don Hamilton, Police Information Officer, and I'm down here at the station for the second time today. Beautiful new station, must say. And I have a few more questions regarding the situation in this area around Troutdale, around Cobbett, and everything that's sort of in the far, in the path of the far right now, is a confusing situation. We don't know what the level of containment is. Do we have anything on that yet?
I can address the issues relating to the highway that ODOT has control over, Interstate 84. That road is closed right now, and it's going to stay closed for as long as it's necessary. It's not safe out there. This is a very dangerous situation. The road is very smoky. There's some fire that's coming right down to the edge of the road in there. We're going to be consulting with the Forest Service and the police agencies and the law enforcement officials out there and the fire officials to make sure that when that road is safe, we'll get it reopened. But we're not going to reopen it until we're confident that it's safe.
What about some of the detour routes? Those look like they might be in danger also. Are there safe detours?
So far, there are safe detours. If you're coming westbound, you need to detour at the Dalles. At least the trucks need to detour at the Dalles and take 197 to Highway 216 and then up to Highway 26 and over the mountain into the city. And going out of the city, it's the same thing. If you're going east, Highway 26 up to 216 and then north back up into the Dalles in there. But all other traffic has to stop when you're eastbound at Troutdale and when you're westbound at Hood River.
There is, one of these large 747 planes that is capable of picking up enormous amounts of water and dropping it on the fire. Is there any chance that what are the chances right now of having one of those operative?
Well, that's a question best addressed to some of the firefighting people on here. ODOT doesn't really have much to do with those issues, but from what I understand is they're planning to use every tool possible, but they haven't had the opportunity yet because of the weather, because of the smoke, because of other circumstances. They haven't been able to deploy that yet.
Speaking, of course, as an ODOT representative, they're wondering about stranded people. How dangerous actually is I-84 right now? Have you had any accidents or any people who've encountered bad situations on I-84?
There's no traffic on I-84 right now, as we made sure that we got everything clear. Originally, yesterday, the closure was at exit 35, but then we moved it in all the way west into Troutdale. But we make sure that everybody is off the road before. We check very carefully, and then we close all the exit ramps, make sure nobody can get onto the road from along in that area.
There's always somebody, it seems like. Any other final advice before we let you go?
Well, I think everybody needs to be patient in this. I think everybody in this community knows that we're going through a very, very difficult situation. We're seeing some extreme damage to one of our really treasured assets in Oregon, the Columbia River Gorge, which I think is beloved by everybody in Oregon. And it's frightening to think of what it's going to look like when we finally get a chance to see it and the smoke clears from all of this. And I fear that we will have seen some significant damage into the gorge. But I think people need to be patient with this. We'll get out of this and we'll be back to wintertime storms before too long.
Thanks so much, Don. I really appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you.
And
thanks for the pair. Appreciate it.
That was Chris Andre reporting on the Eagle Creek fire.
Portland United Against Hate is organizing a counter-protest to Sunday's Freedom March, an alt-right event hosted by Joey Gibson and Patriot Prayer. KBU reporter Kyle Qureshi interviewed Lisa Stiller, a volunteer for Portland United Against Hate.
And what do you do for Portland United Against Hate?
Well, I'm a volunteer helping out with their organizing committee, and we are planning a rally in response to Joey Gibson's Freedom March on Sunday. You'll be down at the Salmon Fountain, and our rally is going to be from 12:30 to 1 music, 1 to 1:30 speakers at Terry Trump Plaza, and then we're walking down to the fountain. And our whole idea is to say that we do not accept any show or anything that espouses hate, bigotry, or intolerance in our city, in our state, in our country. And we feel it really necessary to stand up and be a voice that's louder than theirs.
Can you tell me more about the Portland United Against Hate partnership?
Well, we have over 70 endorsing organizations for this event. You know, we did the rally on June 4th, and we got a lot of the same organizations and others together to partner with us to endorse and with this one on. So we have a very close working relationship with many, many organizations throughout the city. We're also working with the Portland Resistance. We've been in contact with Antifa. And our goal, I mean, everyone's goal is to keep this as peaceful, nonviolent. We are talking about tolerance and love and respect. And we are definitely, you know, advertising this as a nonviolent, peaceful event. We will have peacekeepers, and we will be keeping our distance from Joey's group, but we will also be surrounding them with chants and songs and just hopefully getting across the idea that a different message is what we want to send.
And can you tell me more about Joey Gibson and his group, Patriot Prayer?
Well, supposedly he says he's nonviolent. If you look at his actions in the past, if you look at the people who come to his rallies, you know, the people he attracts, mm-hmm. we're very concerned. These are the people, the alt-right, these are the white supremacists, these are the people who are, you know, the people who support these Confederate statues, the people who support hate, the people who are supporting policies that are counter to everything we believe in. And despite what he says, we know the people he attracts, and we know what the underlying messages are. We also are concerned because he's doing this in a country where the atmosphere now gives permission for this. We have not heard Trump come out very often, or he's come out maybe once or twice, and actually say very strongly, these actions and these groups are not tolerable. This is not who we are. And with an administration that gives tacit support to this, it is especially important to counter it. I feel so strongly about that, mm-hmm. that every single person, no matter if you're Jewish or African-American, Hispanic, Muslim, whatever your background, we need to have each other's backs, and we need to be out there, and we need to say no. The administration's not saying no, so we need to say no.
Absolutely. Why do you think he's calling it a freedom march?
Maybe it's hard to tell what his motives are. Maybe it sounds kind of, you know, benign. Mm-hmm. He definitely, I'm guessing, believes that he has the freedom, which he does. I mean, we all have freedom of speech. It's a kind of a freedom of speech thing. He has the right to, say what he wants to say as long as he's not advocating or inciting violence, and which we think he may be doing.
Right, absolutely.
So we can, you know, it's freedom for him to advocate what he wants to advocate. I don't know, clearly, I can't say what his politics are because only he knows where he's coming from with that. But I think he's been trying to tone down his rhetoric, and this is part of it. And we know that when you espouse bigotry and violence and hatred, that is not freedom. You know, who is that freedom for?
Who are the other organizations involved with Portland United Against Hate?
We have Jewish Voices for Peace. We have Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. We have many churches. We have just a whole list. People can look at the Facebook page and just see the whole list of them. It's growing. It grows every day. And we're really, really, especially really happy to see all the faith organizations that have joined in. Because this is, you know, I come from a faith perspective, too. That says, love your neighbor. And I think this is where the faith people are finally saying, wait a minute, we cannot let this go. We have a lot of labor organizations also are a big part of this.
And do you have any advice for anyone who wants to attend the counter-protest? Any advice for them on how to stay safe or how to protest efficiently?
Well, we're going to have peacekeepers. We're aiming for about 30. We are just going with a whole attitude or notion it's going to be peaceful. People should come, and we're not going to be confrontative. We are going to keep to our group and get our message out there loud and clear. We're asking people to come with just kind of like an attitude of peace, not to come with the intent of let's confront them, you know, let's overwhelm them. We want to overwhelm with love and acceptance. But if people come with that attitude, this is something we're going to do in peace, this is something we're going to do to give a different message, I think we're all going to be safe. We have been doing a really good job of getting it out in the media and our social media that this is a peaceful event. We are working with, you know, as I said, we're working with Antifa and the other groups too. We're all on board with the whole peaceful demonstration part of this. We have reached out to the Portland police, so we have done that, and we don't expect a police presence, but we are definitely doing everything we can to make sure that everyone stays safe.
All right. Well, is there anything you want to add before we wrap up?
We just want to say we really think it's important for everyone to be out there, everyone. And I know people may feel a bit reticent. We don't want to go confront them again. Don't think of it as confrontation. think of going out there and you are sending a different message. You're going out there to have everyone else's back. You know, as I said, because we have an administration that doesn't have your back right now, in a grassroots level, we need to have a show of strength for each other. So it's so important that everyone get out there at least some point during the day. We'll be marching down to the waterfront at 1:30. You know, we're saying it's over about 4. Stay as long as you want, but it's so important for you to be there. Bring friends, make a sign that's peaceful. But we really, really encourage everyone to come out.
From KBOO Evening News, I'm Kyle Carrezzi.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo. At 6, it's Kitchen Table Conversations, followed at 7 by Keeping It Real. Tonight's weather is a 40% chance of thunderstorms and showers with a low of 65. Today in history, in 1522, one of Ferdinand Magellan's ships returned to Spain with a crew of 22, completing the first circumnavigation of the globe. The expedition had begun almost 3 years earlier with 5 ships and 270 men. The quote of the day is from actress and choreographer Rosie Perez, whose birthday is today. If we can't look at the good, bad, and ugly of who we are never going to progress as people, ever.
In response to Hurricane Harvey, a network of thousands of military veterans have come together to offer volunteer support. KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with one of the organizers of the network called Team Rubicon.
We are joined on the line now by Gordon Soderberg, no relation to me, who is with Team Rubicon. Gordon, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your plan in going to volunteer.
Hi, thank you, Jenka, for inviting me. Our plan is pretty expansive. Team Rubicon is now a national disaster response organization made up primarily of veterans, but we're 45,000 strong now since blowing up after Hurricane Sandy and our 350-man response to that. We'll be sending in 1,000 veterans in a second wave. We already have veterans on the ground and first responders and civilians that are qualified to be Team Rubicon members.
You're an all-volunteer organization?
Yes. Team Rubicon's, they have about 100 paid employees nationally now that organize the day-to-day operations and training and logistics and support for the thousands of volunteers we have nationwide that qualify through our online certification and our FEMA classes. And within, you know, well, some people have done it within hours, have gone through the whole spectrum of background checks and everything and then deployed as volunteers. They don't pay anything out of their pocket. All the costs are covered from the day when they leave their house to when they get back. And our national sponsors cover those costs. And we have advanced teams that set up the barracks for everybody, how the food will get delivered. So the volunteers really don't have to think about anything other than helping somebody get their house gutted.
It sounds like you've really got it together, even more than FEMA. They should, it seems like, be taking some advice from you.
They are leaning on us. Since Sandy, prior to Sandy, Mr. Folgate from Florida's FEMA Disaster Response Network was then nominated to run all of National Disaster for FEMA under the Obama administration. He adopted the CERT program that was developed originally by the Forest Service to organize their logistics and operations to fight fires and bring in resources from other areas. And now that's been adopted nationally as a standard to incorporate the volunteer organizations that spontaneously respond to disasters. And how do we learn from the lessons of Katrina in that there was a locked gate at the FEMA response. Now the gate isn't even there, and volunteer organizations are in the emergency response command system getting the
criteria, and we're jointly networking. There's been a big change since Katrina. There's still a lot of lessons that we're learning, but Team Rubicon since Sandy has been kind of at the tip of the spear for both FEMA and volunteer response in terms of putting all these tools together and figuring out how they work best with the various different organizations and their experience level.
And you mentioned the responses to fires. We've got certainly some pretty serious ones going on right now in our area. How many disasters are you prepared to confront at once? You've got, sounds like, a full deployment down to Texas, and we're looking at a potential emergency in Oregon and possibly a major hurricane hitting Florida in the coming days.
Yes. So our national, Team Rubicon's national organization is now 6 years old since they went to Six Guys. And they always had an eye on all kinds of disasters, just like the military has to have eyes on all kinds of threats. And so we've partnered with the BLM service to create fire teams. And they're just reapplying what they learned in the military with a federal certification through the Forest Service or BLM. But when things get big like they are now, that's when we have the local teams, the state first respond to do the site assessment, what's really the scope of the disaster. Then the regional teams come in and do the planning for the response, and then start pulling in resources either regionally or nationally. We have a centralized response center and operations center in Dallas, Texas, that we have our warehouse and the majority of our backup gear for when we have national disasters.
It sounds like it's mostly men in the organization. Are there women and trans people in your organization as well?
We have a giant rainbow in Team Rubicon. We have transgender, gay, lesbian, every spectrum of America that you could think that's joined the military or in emergency responses in our organization. We left our politics at the door.
People sign up online. There's a website.
Yes, so you could sign up to www.teamrubiconusa.org. And we're, like I said, primarily a veterans organization that incorporates all types of volunteers. We just need you to have a background check and go through our orientation and certification through FEMA so that you know the vocabulary that we're using.
So it's just about trying to help people. Does it seem like now we've got these three major disasters going on, does it seem like that's going to be the new normal as climate change impacts are felt more widely?
Well, I'd have to take my Team Rubicon hat off to answer that and put on my veterans green jobs and blight buster hat and say, after Katrina, I was saying, we needed a training and boot camp for this because it's only going to get worse. And it has. And it's exponentially getting worse. And that isn't a fluke of nature. That's a failure of mankind.
Wow. Well, I just want to thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for joining us. Again, I've been speaking with Gordon Soderberg with Team Rubicon. The website to find more information, teamrubiconusa.org. They are headed to Houston and surrounding areas to help with the major months-long cleanup effort following Hurricane Harvey. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Yesterday evening, NBC News reported on a Trump administration memo recently released regarding the end of DACA. The memo states quite bluntly that DACA recipients should, quote, prepare for and arrange their departure from the United States, while also going on to say, quote, or to apply for other immigration benefits for which they may be eligible, end quote. A senior official from the White House told NBC News that the talking points in the memo are, quote, rational and appropriate, end quote, adding that the president is also trying to, quote, find a compassionate, honorable, and constitutional way to address this very real issue. The official also claimed that the prepare for departure message was standard for anyone who does not have legal status. The federal government will not accept any more applications for the program at this time, but it will allow a renewal for current recipients for DACA as long as they apply for renewal of their work permits before October 5th, at which point the entirety of the DACA program expires and is shut down completely on March 5th, 2018.
Seattle Seahawks star Michael Bennett held a press conference today, not to talk about the start of the NFL season, but about the excessive force used on him recently by the Las Vegas police force. Bennett said that after last month's Mayweather-McGregor fight, he heard what sounded like gunshots and left the scene. Bennett said officers then pointed guns at him for doing nothing more than simply being a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time and ordered him to lie down on the ground. Bennett said, "I felt helpless as I lay there on the ground, handcuffed, facing the real-life threat of being killed." Then a second officer came over, forcefully jammed his knee into Bennett's back, and cinched handcuffs tightly on his wrists. After placing him in a police car, officers confirmed his identity and then released him.
With sustained winds of 185 miles per hour, Hurricane Irma hit the islands of Barbuda and Antigua this morning as the most powerful Category 5 hurricane ever recorded in the Atlantic Ocean. The storm appears to have exceeded the maximum theoretical strength for a hurricane in its environment based on current water temperature and other conditions. Breaking another record, unfortunately, this will be the first time two hurricanes of Class 4 or higher made landfall in the U.S. in the same year. A state of emergency has been declared in the U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and Florida. While the storm's path is unpredictable, it's expected to hit Puerto Rico this afternoon and then move past the Dominican Republic, Haiti, and Cuba, hitting South Florida early Sunday.
And now we hear a report on climate change from Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. California's historic drought has come to an end, but the effects still linger.
This past year has been so wet that the snowpack and the surface water reservoirs are all at or well above averages. However, the groundwater system hasn't quite recovered from the drought and the overuse that's been chronic for the last number of years.
That's Claudia Font, a hydrologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. She says California's groundwater has long been overdrawn, especially in the Central Valley. It's used for agriculture, city water supplies, and to sustain streams and wetlands.
The amount of water being pulled out is more than the amount of water going in, and this is accentuated during droughts when there isn't enough surface water or snowpack. If we want to recover, we need to be putting more water into the system than we are taking out.
Given the demand for water, that's no small task, especially because climate change will likely make droughts more common. But finding a better way to manage the water will be critical.
The groundwater system is an invisible but very vital resource that we depend on and particularly depend on during times of drought.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton in for Antonia Gonzalez. A former editor of Indian Country Today Media Network says the media organization will be back in some form despite changes in the industry that caused it to go on hiatus this week. Vincent Schilling is a former arts and entertainment editor at the magazine and online publication. He says he wasn't involved in the financial workings of the company, but believes the primary reason the tribal owners halted operations is the dramatic shift in the publishing industry with the rise of the internet and social media.
And I think the Oneida Indian Nation made decisions based upon, you know, their own interworkings for the past 10 years and just said, you know, I think that maybe we'd be more stronger, more apt to focus on other things right now, and Indian Country Today may do well with other hands.
Publisher Ray Halbritter announced the hiatus on Monday, saying that no new posts, books, or magazines will be released while the company considers a new business model. Indian Country Today Media Network, which has gone through several iterations and names, has been a groundbreaking source of news on issues including the Indian Child Welfare Act, missing and murdered Indigenous women, intergenerational trauma, and human interest stories from Native perspectives. Schilling says he's received an outpouring of support from readers this week, and he's grateful for the opportunities he's had to affect change as a writer and editor over the past decade.
I was the journalist who broke the story about the Native actors walking off the set of the Adam Sandler movie. And I don't care what anyone says. I know that that had a profound effect on the film industry.
Schilling says he's confident the media network is not going away for good.
I really, really do believe strongly that there are quite a few financial backers out there right now that are really interested. I know there are.
IndianCountryMediaNetwork.com will remain accessible through the end of January 2018. A Texas tribe is donating $500,000 to relief efforts in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. KJAS.com reports the Alabama Coushatta Tribe of Texas, in cooperation with Nazcala Gaming, will give $250,000 to Harris County, Texas, and distribute another $250,000 among 10 other Southeast Texas counties. Tribal Council Chairperson Joanne Batiste said the tribe is pleased to be in a position to give back to the region where it's been located since the 1780s. She says the tribe, along with its partners at Nazcala Gaming, will continue to try to raise more funds to help those impacted by Hurricane Harvey. The film Wind River is picking up positive reviews nearly a month after its release. The movie follows the criminal investigation into the death of a Native woman near a reservation in Wyoming, and it invokes the ongoing scrutiny into the handling of missing and murdered women in Canada. U.S. Six Nations actor Graham Greene portrays a local police officer working with the FBI on the investigation. He told Native America Calling this week that his involvement in the film helps his personal mission to call attention to Native issues. He says the film's plot may help introduce audiences to the problem of missing women in Canada and the inability of police to solve cases.
That's just not one case. There's many, many cases of that. The Highway of Tears, Highway 16 in northern British Columbia, they estimate over 40 women have disappeared, and that's just an estimate. They don't know how many, and they haven't bothered to figure it out. And some of these people, they're too afraid to go and admit that this had happened, admit that their children had disappeared. And to this day, mothers they carry this with them to the grave.
Green is among several Native actors who round out the cast that includes Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. With National Native News, I'm Hannah Colton.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says despite not supporting Trump, the Labor Federation has met with Trump's administration laying out things that would help workers. AFL-CIO also has made it clear that if Trump embraces policies that really help workers, the AFL-CIO will support those policies. But Trumka says instead of helping workers, Trump has been hurting us, and the AFL-CIO's advice on how to really help workers, for the most part, has been ignored.
When he started attacking things like health and safety standards, coal mine standards, and those regulations, I had several meetings with the administration, told them the adverse and bad effect that had on workers, showed them a position that would reverse that and actually help workers, make places more safe, or increase wages, and gave that to the administration. Unfortunately, in most cases, that wasn't taken.
Organized labor is part of the Hurricane Harvey relief effort. The Texas Workers Relief Fund was set up by the Texas AFL-CIO. The national AFL-CIO is donating $100,000 to that fund and is raising $5 million more. The AFL-CIO Housing Investment Trust is also investing $500 million over 5 years into affordable housing in areas affected by Harvey. National Nurses United is deploying over 1,000 volunteer nurses to hurricane-hit areas, from first responders to IBEW electrical workers working overtime to restore and repair repair damage to the electric power grid, Labor is pitching in to help. The AFL-CIO also says the Building Investment Trust, a bank collective trust that provides risk-adjusted returns for union pension plans, and Ulico, a labor movement-affiliated financial service company, are working with the AFL-CIO on job-creating commercial real estate and infrastructure investment. The AFL-CIO's Liz Schuler says working people and our unions all across America are giving our cash donations, our investment capital, and our solidarity. Gallup says 61% of Americans approve of labor unions. It's the annual poll Gallup has been doing on unions since 1936, always showing strong support for labor unions. Gallup says that number is the highest percentage since the 65% approval recorded in 2003. According to decades of annual Gallup polling results, historically, unions have enjoyed strong support from the American public. In 1936, 72% of Americans approved of labor unions. Union approval peaked in the 1950s when it reached 75% in 1953 and 1957.
Let's get America working. We must build, maintain, and repair our nation's crumbling infrastructure. Teamsters support a bipartisan approach to creating good jobs for American workers. Learn more at letsgetamericaworking.com. Teamsters strong, America stronger.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
NASA scientists recently have been very excited about a new discovery discovered during its Juno mission to Jupiter, which started last July. The discovery also makes the scientists for the mission very confused. Juno's principal investigator Scott Bolton told Wired in May that almost nothing is as we anticipated. What's so weird and different about Jupiter is just about everything, but namely its polar auroras, which are oddly much more powerful than NASA had originally predicted. To briefly explain what auroras are, at least on Earth, they are visible because of accelerated electrons raining down on our planet's atmosphere. These electrons tend to accelerate along magnetic field lines toward the poles, and the potential energy they produce goes into overdrive the closer to the poles they get. NASA predicted that Jupiter's polar aurora potential energy would be between 10 to 30 times stronger than normally seen on Earth near the poles. However, once the Juno satellite passed through Jupiter's orbit a few times, NASA discovered that Jupiter auroras actually emit nearly 100 times more potential energy than Earth's auroras. That's quite a big difference, but it still leaves NASA scientists baffled and very excited to discover what else in the universe they don't know.
A U.S. citizen was wounded Wednesday during a suicide attack at an entrance gate at Bagram Air Base in northern Afghanistan. According to officials, the bomber rode on a motorcycle and did not make it past any checkpoints, but detonated his explosives at the main entrance targeting truck suppliers. U.S. Forces Afghanistan said in a statement, quote, "The explosion resulted in a small number of casualties. The casualties are being treated at Bagram medical facilities." The attacker was suspected to be from the Taliban, which is reportedly angry that the U.S. dropped leaflets in northern Afghanistan on Tuesday depicting a dog with a Quranic verse on its body. U.S. forces have since apologized for dropping that leaflet. Major General James Linder, who heads U.S. and NATO special forces in Afghanistan, said in a written statement, "The design of the leaflets mistakenly contained an image highly offensive to both Muslims and the religion of Islam." He goes on to say, "I sincerely apologize. We have the deepest respect for Islam and our Muslim partners worldwide." The attack also comes just a few weeks after President Trump announced that the U.S. would expand its presence and continue to stay in Afghanistan for the foreseeable future to prevent terrorists from taking advantage of a security vacuum in the country.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Isabel Cochran, Dan Raphael, Chris Andre, and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Kyle Carrezzi. Our engineer is David Kesters. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Aaron J. Bernard.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7 o'clock is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge with guest host Reverend Joseph Santos Lyons, who welcomes the executive director of Opal Environmental Justice. At 9, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell will bring you the news that you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, a look back at Brzezinski's brilliant idea to back Afghan Islamists in order to give the Soviet Union their own Vietnam. At 10 o'clock is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, followed by Flashpoints at 10:15 with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock on Between the Covers, Jacqueline Woodson's latest novel, Another Brooklyn, is a poetic tale of four African-American girls growing up in the 1970s in New York. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Portland novelist Renee Watson talks about her new collaboration, Before Betty X, about the early life of Malcolm X's wife. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today to become a member.
Stay tuned for News from the Boo coming up next. This program has been made possible by KBOO members and support from the Oregon Symphony, presenting a special concert, Angelique Kidjo with the Oregon Symphony, on Tuesday, September 26th at the Arlene Snitzer Concert Hall. Information and tickets for this event with Angelique Kidjo is available now at orsymphony.org.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Yep, that's right, folks. Hello and welcome to News from the Boo, your weekly updates. What is going on in and around KBOO? I'm Delphine Crescenzo, and today I'm very excited to be welcoming a friend on News from the Boo. That's Ender Black. I'm actually doubly excited because this Saturday is also the KBOO annual membership meeting, which is an opportunity for all KBOO members and interested parties to come together to have some food, listen to some music, some wise words, and get a chance